If you'll turn to Luke chapter 17, we're going to be looking at verses 7 through 10 tonight. Have you ever had a thankless job? And I don't mean working at a fast food restaurant or stocking shelves at a grocery store. I mean a job where you did not expect to be thanked because you are the one who was thankful. Maybe, for example, a mentorship where you were working under someone you looked up to so intensely that it was just a privilege to have the opportunity to be taught by this person. And whatever they told you to do, you did it. And you didn't complain and you didn't talk back and you would do anything they said. I've had opportunities like this. I've trained under martial artists that I've stood out in the cold and trained for hours and I didn't ask questions. I would have stayed out there till the sun come up. They never told me to come inside. And it's this mentality of submissiveness and humility, and you tell me what to do and I'll do it. And I'm not going to complain about it. Well, Jesus gives a similar story, but different, of a servant and having a servant mentality. And we learn some wonderful lessons about our mentality. To me, one of the most important things that we can think about is our thinking, our mentality. And so this is a great passage for that. So in Luke 17, let's read verses 7 through 10. This is Jesus talking to his apostles. He says, if you had faith, verse 7. Which of you, having a slave, plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, come in immediately and sit down to eat? But will he not say to him, prepare something for me to eat, and properly clothe yourself, and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you may eat and drink? He does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? So you too, when you do all the things which you are commanded, say, we are unworthy slaves. We have done only that which we ought to have done. What a wonderful spirit to have, this humility to have toward our God. And the first thing in understanding exactly what Jesus was saying and why he was saying it is to look at the context of where this passage comes up. I find it pretty interesting. It starts back in verse 1. And let's just start there in verse 1 and get the sense of this passage. He said to his disciples, it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to him through whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he would cause one of these little ones to stumble. So here we have the idea of offenses. And now related to that idea is in verses 3 and 4, forgiving offenses. Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you 7 times a day and returns to you 7 times a day saying, I repent, forgive him. Now what we have here is we have a difficult command for these apostles and for us. I mean, can you imagine? Someone lies to you. And they come and they say, look, I'm really sorry I lied. And you say, well, I can't believe you did that, but I forgive you. And then the same day, maybe an hour later, you know, they come again and they lie to you. And they say, look, I lied to you again. I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me? And you say, I thought we'd already been through this. A second time? You've already lied to me twice in one day? Okay, I mean, I forgive you, but come on. And then a third time they come to you and they say, I don't know what's with me today. I lied to you again. And you say, okay, you know, that's it. I mean, I've forgiven you twice. I don't know how many times I can forgive you. And you run out of mercy and you run out of forgiveness. And you know, Jesus talks about in Matthew 18, forgive someone 70 times 7. And he's not trying to give us a mathematical formula there. He's saying, you have unlimited forgiveness in your heart. And while this is not a sermon about forgiveness per se, it sets up the context of what we're going to be looking at. Because he gives them this extremely difficult command. And they are thinking, this is beyond something that I can do. Forgive someone 7 times in a day. And their following statement is, increase our faith in verse 5. And by that, they do not mean, help us to know how to pray, increase our mental assent to God. They are saying, help us to be better Christians and be able to live up to this difficult calling that we are called to do difficult things like forgive someone seven times a day. And living the Christian life is often very difficult and very challenging. It's not just so easy in that you can just do it without any effort. No, it takes diligence. As the sermon this morning, it takes persistent effort. And so he tells them, have faith like a mustard seed. Now I'll talk about that in one moment. It's helpful to think about how is your faith. When I was at Florida College, there was a fellow who would always ask, every time I came around him, he would ask me, how's your faith? It didn't matter. Every time I saw him, he'd say, hey, Adam, how's your faith? And sometimes I would almost dread that because I would be forced to give a commentary on my spiritual condition. So I would tell him, and I'd be honest, well, I'm not doing so great. You know, I'm busy with school, and I feel just discouraged and a little depressed right now. And I would just be very honest with him. And it always helped me, though, because he would talk to me about that and help me and encourage me. And I would ask him, how's your faith? And we would just have an honest discussion about our faith. And so that word faith doesn't always just mean that only the sense of our belief, but in the sense of our entire spiritual condition and our mindset, our spiritual strength. And so Jesus responds in verse 6 by saying, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. We read that and we think, okay, Jesus is telling his apostles about how to commit some kind of, how to perform a miracle here. No, he's not talking about anything miraculous. He's not talking about a literal physical explanation of this. And we almost feel cheated when it's not. You know, we want this to be, oh, well, Jesus is telling us we can move trees into the ocean. He's not making that point. He's making the point that there's this tree, and it's really the Egyptian fig tree is what he's talking about. It's this tree that the roots really go down far into the ground very quickly. It's a tree that grows very quickly, very large. And he's saying you can, by having a strong spiritual life and condition, you can remove this mulberry tree and pluck it up by its roots and put it into the ocean. He's not talking about anything literal. He's talking about something spiritual. And the spiritual application is much greater than any physical application could ever be. And so think about the spiritual application of that. He's saying, if you just had a little spiritual strength, you could do powerful things. Just a little. Imagine what you could do with a lot. And he's talking about a little mustard seed. That's a very, very tiny seed. Doesn't take much spiritual strength. And you can overcome things. And you can do things like forgive someone seven times a day. And that is right when he enters into the discussion of the attitude of a servant. And so he's talking about having the attitude that serving God, I'm only doing what I ought to have done. I'm only doing what is expected. And if you have that attitude, then even forgiving someone seven times in a day is nothing extraordinary. Because, that's just what is expected of me. There's nothing great or special about that. It's just part of serving God. And plus, I think that when you have this sense of unworthiness, that is a starting point for spiritual growth to increase your faith. Once you just break yourself down and you are completely unworthy and you say, I need to be way up here and do much better, then that is a starting point for your spiritual growth. If you say, look at what I have done and how great I am, then your spiritual growth is already stunted. So it's in that context that he says this, I think. Okay, so we go into verses 7 and 8, and we're going to focus on those two verses. And the idea here, I think, is patient and diligent service. So let's read those verses again. Which of you, having a slave, plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, come in immediately and sit down to eat? But will he not say to him, prepare something for me to eat, and properly clothe yourself and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you may eat and drink? Now I want you to imagine that you are the slave. You are this slave that is in this parable. And we are talking here about humane slavery. We're not talking about cruel slavery like you might think of when you immediately think slavery. We're talking about a master who treats his slave well and a slave who serves his master well. Just imagine you have been plowing all day, or you have been tending sheep all day, and you're tired and you are worn out, and maybe you're very hungry, and your master arrives. And you know, when your master arrives, well, it's time for you to go and take care of your master. And so you go in, and you clean up, and you put on the proper clothes, and you prepare a meal to the best of your ability, and you present that meal to your master, and you serve him hand and foot while he eats, and you don't complain, and you're happy this way. This is what you expect. And you know that you won't get to eat until he is finished eating, and that's fine with you. Imagine if you are that slave. Now, applications to us, we need to expect that serving God is going to be work. It is going to be tiresome. It is going to be difficult. We're going to have to persevere. When we're serving God, we give God our best. No shortcuts. No loopholes. Give him the best that you've got in every possible way. Don't be lukewarm. Serve God without question or complaint. And realize that the time of our reward is not yet here. It's time to plow. Right now it's time to work. The time for rest will be soon enough. You know, Paul was anxious, you know, Philippians chapter 3. He wanted to go home. He wanted to be with God, but he knew that if he stayed, it would be better for them. And he did end up staying. After that Roman imprisonment, from the evidence of Titus and 1 Timothy, we know that he was released from Roman imprisonment and did many other things for probably about 2 years until he was put to death. And so he had more work to do, and he was willing to do that. Now, I want to think about the example of Jesus, the ultimate example of a servant. Now, I will allude to Philippians quite often because really Philippians is a book of mentalities. And in Philippians chapter 2, you have that section, verses 5 through 8, about Jesus and his humility and that he was at the highest of highs and he came down to the lowest of lows. And we are told to have this mind and put other people first. And if he can be humble, then we can be humble. He was God. And he came down and lived like us. And not only did he live like us, but he humbled himself to the point of death. Even the death on the cross. You think of that servanthood mentality that Jesus had. He was the servant, not the served. Luke chapter 22, flip over a couple pages. Start in verse 24. And he said to them, well, okay, I'm one ahead. And there arose also a dispute among them as to which one of them was regarded to be the greatest. This is his disciples. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But it is not this way with you. But the one who is the greatest among you shall or must become like the youngest, and the leader like the servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves. And you will remember when Jesus washed his disciples' feet and told them, I did not come to be served, but to serve and to give my life a ransom for many. What a wonderful spirit of servanthood our Christ had. And he did not question God's will. Look in that same chapter in verses 41 and 42 when Jesus was in Gethsemane before he was arrested. And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw. And he knelt down and began to pray and saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Yet not my will, but yours be done. He said, whatever you say to do, God, I'm going to do it. I'm not looking forward to this. This is not going to be fun. But I'm going to do whatever you have me to do, even to death. Even the lowest death on the cross. They're going to hang Christ up like a piece of meat to hang there and suffer and die. The King of kings and Lord of lords. You think about that mentality, that humility. Why do we serve God? Because he said so. You know, sometimes we don't understand. Well, okay, why, for example, be baptized? I don't understand that. Why do I have to get wet? We can try to understand it and study it, and it does make sense. But if it still doesn't make sense to us, the bottom line is, God said so. God said so. You know, parents often tell their children, when their children ask, why? You know, my 2-year-old, he's 2.5, and he's gotten into this why phase. Everything is, why, Dad? I answer that question, why? And every time I answer a question, another why. So he will ask me why. I'll tell him to do something. And sometimes I don't feel like explaining. And this may not always be a good answer. But I will look at him and I'll say, because I said so, son. That's why. He'll say, yes, sir. And so before God, we need to have the attitude of, whatever you say, I'm going to do because you said so. Jesus gave 100%. When it was tiresome, when it was difficult, when life was not easy, you think about his entire ministry was riddled with persecution. He was being pursued with people trying to end his life. He had no place to lay his head. And he was willing to go through the most horrible death that a human could go through. And he says in Luke 9:23, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. He says, it's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy. It's not meant to be easy. You have to take up your cross and follow in his footsteps. So we have this attitude of patience and diligence in our service to God. Thirdly here, we see the humble attitude of unworthiness and of duty in verses 9 and 10. So back in Luke 17, let's read verses 9 and 10 again. I want you to put yourself in the place of this slave, because the emphasis is on the attitude of the slave. Verse 9, he does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? So you too, when you do all the things which are commanded you, say, we are unworthy slaves. We have done only that which we ought to have done. So imagine you're the slave. You've done everything. You've plowed. He came home. You served him. And you had your meal also after he had his. You did everything which was expected. You did not do it for a thank you. Your attitude was not, hey, look at what I've done. Aren't I a great slave? I'm such a wonderful servant. I took care of you. Can you pat me on the back? No, it was, I only did what I'm supposed to do. And nothing more. There's nothing great and special about this. That was the servant's attitude. This is what I agreed to. This is nothing special. And isn't that the nature of service? You know, when you serve others, why do you do it? Do you do it for a thank you? Do you do it for a reward? True service does not serve so that we will get something in return. You know, at Florida College, there was a group of people, I don't remember, they had a name they called themselves, but they kind of were secret. And they would do these really wonderful kind acts, kind of extravagant kind acts for people. And nobody ever knew who they were. And so nobody knew who to thank. And I just really like that example of service. They did not do it for a thank you. They did not do it for a reward. They did it because they love people and because they love God. Luke chapter 6, if you want to turn back. I'm trying to keep most of our passages in Luke to make it easy for us to get to. Luke 6, verses 32 to 33. We'll start at verse 31. Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. But love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High, for He Himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. That is the spirit we must have. And God owes us no thanks for our service. Now, I do want to say that God is grateful. He appreciates what we do and He recognizes what we do. Hebrews 6:10, for God is not unjust so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward His name in having ministered and in still ministering to the saints. He's not going to forget your work. He recognizes your work, and our service to Him is a beautiful thing. It is a sweet aroma to God. Hebrews 13 and verse 16. And we are a very special people to Him. We are a royal priesthood and a holy nation. So don't get the idea that, well, God is just this very cold master who does not appreciate what we do. No, it's not that. That's not the point. The point is to focus on the attitude of the servant here. And so, we are the ones who are privileged. Not God. We are the ones who are thankful to be His children. You know, really, God owes us nothing. We haven't earned salvation. We haven't earned any of our blessings. Not a single one of them. They are all from God's hand. And God cannot be indebted to us. In other words, He cannot owe us anything. We owe Him our lives. We are saved not by our perfect works, but by faith. Romans 4 and verses 4 and 5. Now to him who works, that is him who tries to save himself by perfect law keeping, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. You do all that you can do, and what you end up with is coming short. You are in debt to God. You owe God more. But to him who does not work, that is him who does not try to save himself by perfect law keeping, but believes on him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is accounted for righteousness. And so we are saved by faith, obedient faith. And our blessings were given at God's good pleasure. Ephesians 1 talks a lot about that. We are at the mercy of our master. And you think about it, if we really got what we deserved. And I like to think about that sometimes. When I start thinking, I really deserve heaven. I stop for a minute. And I think, if I really got what I deserved, well, we'd all get hell. That's what we would get. All of us who are of accountable age. And so we better be glad that we don't get what we deserve and thank God that He has had mercy and extended all of His blessings toward us. All of the blessings that we have in Christ. When we obey God, we have only done what is expected. You know, maybe it was this week, I don't remember. But a person, I think in Massachusetts, I saw on the news, had fallen into a pond. Freezing water, and three or four men, there were firemen, got a canoe and pushed it out on the water. A canoe, and this thing was almost falling two or three times. And one of the men had to get in the water, risking his life, and swim out to get the man who was drowning. You think about incredible things like that, someone risking their life for someone else. But then often people that do that will have the attitude, a very humble attitude of, anybody would have done it in my place. You would have done the same thing, they will say. But we know the truth is that not anybody would have done that. That's an extraordinary thing in the eyes of the world, to risk your life to save somebody else. But the attitude of, anybody would have done this, is that of, this is nothing special. Isn't that the attitude we need to have? We have only done what we should do when we obey God. Obeying God may be extraordinary by the world's standards, but not by God's standards. Like forgiving someone seven times a day. The world will look at that and say, if you can do that, you're an amazing person. God will look at that and say, if you can do that, that just shows that you're serving me. God expects obedience. You think about Romans 1, verses 19 through 20, that God has revealed Himself in such a way that they are without excuse who do not obey and believe in God. And we need to have this attitude of unworthiness. Not that we are unworthy totally and altogether, because God considers us worthy. But in our mentality, we need to think of ourselves as unworthy and unprofitable. And we always need to try to be more profitable, no matter how profitable we are. No matter how many people we have converted, no matter how many challenges we have overcome, no matter how many people look up to us, our attitude in the end needs to be, I'm only doing what I ought to do. And that's it. I've heard the illustration of someone that fell into a well. And a fella came along and looked down and saw this guy in the well and said, hey, do you need help? And the guy says, yes, I'm down here. I'm stuck. It's slippery, man. I need some help. He says, okay. So he lowers down a bucket on a rope. He says, all right, sit on that bucket and hold on to that rope tight. The guy says, okay, got it. So the guy up top pulls him up. Fella gets up, jumps off the bucket, and starts running around bragging about how well he hung onto that rope and sat on that bucket. Isn't that silly? When we obey God, all we're doing is what He tells us to do in order for Him to save us. And we run around bragging about, look what I've done. I held onto this rope so well. Aren't I great? And Jesus' point to his apostles here is, no, you have to have a broken spirit. When we have this attitude, this eliminates a holier-than-thou mentality. And I think as Christians, people already look at us and have that suspicion anyway. Many people in the religious world. Well, you think you're the only ones who go to heaven. And you think you're better than the rest of us. And even if you don't have that mentality, it might be easy to come across that way if you don't take extra caution. So in our studying with others and setting an example and talking to others about sin, we need to have a great sense of humility so that we will not come across as being holier than thou. They need to see that our attitude is, I just want to do what God's word is or what God's word says. And I could be wrong, so let's just get the Bible out and let's just look at it together and see what it says. And when you have that attitude, you'll be much more effective toward people. Well, in conclusion, when you consider all the difficult things that serving God entails, and it is difficult if you really try to live the life, it really makes you ask God, increase my faith. And I think that's exactly the situation we have here. He says, this is something very difficult to do. And they say, increase my faith, Lord. And we need to pray that to God. Increase our faith. Make us stronger. Make us better. When our attitude is, I'm only doing what is expected of me, then we will always be growing. But when we have the attitude, look at what I've done, and we brag, or we brag to ourselves, then that's when our growth is stunted and our faith will not increase.